And I want to make sure that you know that when you share with your clients, you're really clear with them that what you're offering is education. You're evaluating them, assessing them to see where they are in their nutritional and hormonal status, and you're going to give them some educational guidance for how they can do some lifestyle and diet and supplement changes, how they can speak to their doctor if they have one about what's going on to see if they can get support. So make sure that you're really clear with people. And even if you have a medical degree or license, if you do coaching on the phone long distance, you're not working under that license, because that license is usually localized to a particular province or state, unless you've seen that person in person. So you're really coaching, whether you're a medical doctor, a health coach, a chiropractor, a physical therapist, you're coaching. And we're going to keep it that way.
Let's just review stage one, two, and three. Stage one is tired and wired, right? They're sympathetic dominant. The DHA is low. This is what we're looking for on our reports. The DHA would be low. The cortisol would be high. All right? Now, if they're in a pre-stage one, like an alarm state, we might actually see both cortisol high and DHA high. So they're going into the stage one, which means that there's some pathology actually starting to happen. The DHA is low, and you get the negative effects of that plus cortisol high. You're draining the reserves. They're experiencing the negative effects of cortisol on blood pressure, on blood sugar, on the weight around their middle, on liver detox, and all those things that we talked about, the immune system. They tend to sometimes get a slump in the mid-afternoon, not all of them, and most of them are going to be wired at bedtime. In stage two, the reserves become depleted. I like to call that barely hanging on. So stage one, wired and tired. Stage two is barely hanging on. Their reserves have become depleted. They've been in a sympathetic dominant state for so long that their DHA is low. The cortisol is low, but is normal overall. The total cortisol is normal. But what you oftentimes see are highs and lows. They may actually have some high spots, and they may actually have some low spots. The overall balances out. Now, someone who's not as experienced at reading these might look at a stage two and not be able to differentiate, especially since a lot of the labs will show the range of DHA to be anywhere from 3 to 10. And then you're going, wait a minute, that's a pretty darn wide range. That's a ridiculously wide range. And people at 3, they're going, well, these people are normal. I've had people being told they were normal when they weren't. They have low reserves, and the immune system is compromised. Also, sex drive starts to go down here. The exhaustion, can't keep the head out of the cereal bowl. Both DHA and cortisol are low. They still might have a few spiky things, but the overall is low. They may have one that comes a little bit up into the normal range or stays up there. So there are going to be variations, and we'll look at a number of variations of those. They do have low libido. They have sex hormone imbalances. They may have hot flashes, mood swings, irritability, crankiness, painful periods, you name it. Accelerated signs of aging. You start to see them sagging. You start to see more wrinkles. And the memory goes, that brain fog, that lack of focus, the inability to find where you left your keys. Those things start to happen. And that's like people think, oh, those are senior moments. But, yeah, not when you're 35, okay? That's more adrenal burnout. And here's the progression. And this is a chart I got from the BioHealth site, which is where I did most of my tests now. You have somebody that's good and healthy and happy and normal. Cortisol levels are perfectly normal. And the DHA is normal. So the next thing you're going to look at is they start to go into the alarm and then stage one, where the cortisol levels are high. And then they start to wear out. The adrenals just can't keep up with it anymore. The reserves are down. The nutrients are down. They've depleted a lot of this stuff. And then they go down where their cortisol is in the normal range. But look at the difference between normal at the beginning, which is just this flat line, and normal in the stage two, okay, much different. And you're also combining normal DHEA in the first one and abnormal probably in the second one. And then we've got stage three, so we just go way down there, and there even can be like a stage four, which would be failure. It's like they're gone. You know, the only way to get them back is to actually give low-dose cortisone, and that's done a lot, as long as it's physiologic doses, not the steroid-level doses that we see the athletes using. So this is a stage one. So you can see the first morning number is within the range. It's at the very high end of the range, but all of the rest of them are above the range. So we look at the cortisol sum, we have 53. Now, this particular person also did a cortisol nighttime. Oh, no, they didn't do it. Never mind. So this is a true sum. So you look at this. This is really high. Is this person going to be able to sleep? I doubt it. How are they going to sleep, right? How are they going to sleep when their levels are so high? Their levels are what's normal for afternoon or morning, like noon and afternoon. That's where they should be. How are they going to fall asleep then? They're still alert. So this is a stage one. What are we going to do for a stage one? Well, we want to go through all the processes of getting them in balance. We want to figure out what their stressors are. We want to put them on a stress reduction program. If the stress happens to be, we suspect something in the gut, we may do some gut testing or some gut healing protocols. We may do some blood sugar balancing protocols. But we're going to get them on a clean diet. We're going to get them doing whether it's meditation, yoga, tapping, heart mass, some sort of stress management system to try to bring their response down so they don't keep taxing the system. And then we're going to look at nutrients, right? Are they getting enough vitamin C? They need a lot of vitamin C because they're burning through it like crazy. So I usually will either start somebody at 1 gram 3 times a day and then ask them to gradually increase it so that they get to the point where they get close to bowel tolerance, they get some diarrhea, they back off, or to do a vitamin C flush. Now, when you're working with somebody, a vitamin C flush is where you take a whole lot of vitamin C over the course of several hours and wait till you have an enema-like evacuation. You've got to be careful about who you do this with. Don't do a vitamin C flush with somebody who has irritable bowel syndrome. It could make their irritable bowel syndrome worse. Don't do it with somebody who has an active flare of Crohn's because the extra C, the extra acid, can actually irritate it. It might help heal it, but it's going to not feel so good, right? So there's times when you should and times when you shouldn't. The safest way is to just start them at 1 gram 3 times a day and then have them just keep adding 1 gram to each dose one at a time until they get to the point where they're going, and the bowel movements are changing, okay? So the other things we could do here is to try to calm this person down. Hey, we can use some of the calming, soothing herbs, especially at bedtime. You don't want to give them a calming, soothing herb that's going to make them fall asleep in the middle of the day, like a lemon balm. But you can do lemon balm. You can do passion flower. You can do milky oats. And there's a number of them that you could do to help bring them down at bedtime. But what about during the day? Well, what about there's a specific formulation. It's phosphorylated serine. Serine's an amino acid. Phosphorylated serine helps to dampen the cortisol response. So to help bring that cortisol down, you take phosphatidylserine. But here's the thing with that. It's been shown that the most effective doses tend to be pretty darn high, like up to 800 milligrams a day. I've never seen it in capsules bigger than 100 milligrams. So you figure 8 of those a day, usually a bottle has maybe 30 of them in it or 60. So even if it's 60, taking 8 a day, that's only going to last you 6 days, right? And if you figure a bottle is even going to be, you know, $20, $30, then that's a lot of money to be spending every 6 days. Now, people can do it if it's worth it. You can also get it as a cream. You can get a thing called Adrenacom from Apex, and it's just a cream that you put on, and it has the phosphatidylserine in it, among other nice calming herbs. So that's the stuff I would do here, is I would do the phosphatidylserine. I'd probably have them take a dose at noon and a dose at 4 in the afternoon and then another dose at dinner time and then another dose at bedtime. That would give them 4 doses, and that would help this person calm themselves down while supporting the adrenals, while taking away the stresses. Okay, so stage two, here's this classic stage two. If we look down, usually the first thing I look at is I want to look at the cortisol sum. Your cortisol sum is 23.6. Our range is 23 to 42. So while this person is in the normal range, they're at the low end. So they're a stage two. two, but they're heading to stage three. And you can see that by looking at the curve, right? Their morning cortisol is 14 in a range of 13 to 24. I like to see it, like I said, at least minimum, middle of the range, so like at a 19 or 20. Okay, they're 14. Their noon is not so bad. It's in the only one that's actually in the range, if you look at it. But then at 2 in the afternoon, they drop way down, and they're even below the surface, right? Below. So that person might be getting that horrible afternoon slump that they just can't stand. And when you look at this, it explains it. And then their bedtime is low, which could be good. It could help them to be falling asleep easily. People with a pattern like this generally don't have trouble falling asleep. They may have trouble staying asleep if the numbers start to go up. So here's a class, he's a stage two, but they're closer, heading towards a stage three. Okay? And the DHA is 2.6, so that's definitely low. Even though that says 2 to 10, the range really should be 7 to 10. Okay. So what else? What do we do about this? Well, we do want to give this person extra support to be able to make more cortisol because she's at the low end of the range and be able to make more DHEA. So if you wanted to go the bioidentical route after you've done the here's the stress management, here's what we're going to do about the stress, get them on a clean diet, a stress-free diet, talk to them about, you know, foods and patterns and heart math and all that. You can give them some DHA and pregnenolone according to the dose that we were talking about earlier, which was right on the chart on page 11, and that is they're at the 9 to 12 drops, right? So they're closer to the stage 3, so I'd probably work this person up to 12 drops. If this person was a super sensitive person, I'd start them with drop 2, 3 and just gradually build them up. If they're not and they want to get results quickly, I'd start them with the 9 and then move them up to the 12 and see if there's a difference in how they were feeling. On the DHEA, I would go with the 3 drops, maybe 2 drops even. I might do 3 drops first thing in the morning because their cortisol is okay, but I wouldn't want to suppress it. So if you have your first and second dose, maybe you do 3 drops, and later in the day I would just do 1 because you don't want to suppress the cortisol any more than it already is done. So some of this is formulaic, and some of it is kind of you need to do some digging and looking and making decisions. So what else could you do here? We could do the nutrients, right? The vitamin C, pantothenic acid, pregnenolone. We had all of those. I'm not pregnenolone. We had all those listed. B6. You just kind of look and see what do you think they're deficient in based on what their diet's like and what their symptoms are like. And you don't want to be overly aggressive with supplements because it's a lot to take and people get they get frustrated and then they don't do it. You want to really be looking at what do they think they need the most. So if they tend to have other immune problems, the vitamin C might be a good thing for them to be doing, right? Start with that. Vitamin C is, you can't go wrong, except if someone is pregnant or nursing. You generally don't want to go above the 3 grams of vitamin C if someone's pregnant or nursing because you can create a rebound scurvy in the baby. That's what I would be careful about. And then you could do some adaptogenic herbs. You might want to do some licorice root at this 4 in the afternoon to bring it up. That would be the only time I would really do it. You might consider doing it first thing in the morning to get their level up a little bit and the afternoon, okay? The midday is pretty good. In the nighttime, we don't want to raise that up at all. Generally, you don't want to give licorice after, say, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, unless somebody's really flatlined and you know that they don't tend to be sensitive to these stimulating effects. Then you can look at what else can you add. You know, I would look at this and I would look at the list of herbs for stage 2 and I would read them and see how well that correlates with your client, right? Do they also have digestive issues? Okay, you choose the herb according to that. Do they also have thyroid issues? Maybe ashwagandha would be a really good one because it's good for both. Right? Do they also have immune issues or lung issues? Maybe you'd go for cordyceps mushrooms based on that. So you kind of look at them, everybody, case by case, you look through the different herbs and you get more and more familiar with what they do and who to get them to. Stage 3. Let's look at stage 3. Our cortisol sum is 19, so it's below the what it should be. The DHEA is 2.22, so it's very low. The cortisol-DHEA ratio we haven't talked about much, and we kind of can sort of use it, but sometimes it can be skewed. It's basically the ratio between cortisol and DHEA, and you want it to be low, like 5 to 6. And if the DHEA goes down and the cortisol goes up, you're going to have a bigger variance. So people in stage 1 tend to have much higher cortisol-DHEA ratios than people in stage 3. Does that mean that they're sicker? No, it means that they have a higher ratio because they're still in the alarm state. So you look at your herbs, you get your nutrients. If you wanted to do bioidenticals on this one, like I said, I would go with the 12. On this one, I would do, the 12 to 15 drops three times a day and the 2 drops of DHEA. I wouldn't bat an eye at doing this unless there were contraindications to that. Okay, you could use licorice with this person. You could do it at the first thing in the morning. You can do it all throughout the day as long as you finish it by noon. You can use ginseng. You just have to look at the person's individual characteristics and see which ones go best. So this is an example from Diagnostics, which is another lab that I've used in the past. I've started to use BioHealth more because in doing some research on the kind of plates they use for running them, it just seems like they may be more accurate. We're basically looking here. We don't have the numbers written out, but we're looking at the picture. So if you look, the person is black, the blue are the ranges. So this one's a clear stage 3. Look, they're almost flatlined, right? They're below 5 first thing in the morning. They're below 5 almost at like 2 midday. You know, they're staying pretty flatlined at like, looks like maybe around 3, 3.5. And then it drops down at midnight. Okay, this person probably sleeps like a baby, but they may not because of the effects on the other hormone. You know, I'm not going to go through the protocol for each one of these over and over again if it's similar to what we've already talked about, but there will be cases where there's some difference in the variations that I will address. Here's another version. This is also from Diagnostics. When they used to not do the pretty ones, and then they started doing the pretty ones. So, okay, so this one, we don't know what stage it is. And this is a little bit misleading because we don't have the cortisol sum, so we could kind of estimate the cortisol sum to get an idea. I would say this particular one is probably going to average out to a stage 2, probably going to be a stage 2, because all the numbers are actually within the normal range. And although that first one, you know, it's somebody going from a stage 1 into a stage 2, so early stage 2 is where I would put this. Okay, and I like to use the ones that have numbers, but I'll show you a few others. This one, again, we don't have the numbers, but looking at this, I would say, look, they're in the range, and way out of the range. So it's probably going to show up as, it might show up as a stage 1, but it's more likely to show up as a stage 2. And you're going to see when your stage 2s are going to be, some of them are going to be on the border between 2 and 3 or 2 and 1.